Intern Allen Show. I believe episode 42. It is Tuesday. June 25th, I believe. 9:41 Eastern. And, we're left with baseball. Baseball's all that's left. Not that I was ever a huge hockey guy, but there are now no other sports going on other than the Twins. If you're a big European championship soccer fan, then, you know, I probably won't talk about it, but I will be watching when I can. A lot of those games are during the day, so that's a little difficult for me. But I guess U.S. soccer's in the Copa America. Nobody really cares about that, it feels like. I guess the Olympics are going to start soon, but other than that, it's pretty much baseball and baseball only until I guess football comes back. I guess until the preseason, until training camp. Yikes. Well, anyway, we'll talk a lot about baseball today. I will talk about the Stanley Cup, probably be the first thing even. I'm going to lead the show with hockey. That's crazy. Then a little foot update for the post game. We have a Royce Lewis deep dive. I did some research. I did some real ass preparation for this podcast. So hopefully that'll be good. Hopefully that's enough to make this podcast long enough. To be honest, I don't know if it will be. But let's get started. Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals, was last night. Again, I'm leading the show with hockey. Feels insane. I think my body is just like, my brain, my body is just like, it's June. There's supposed to be super interesting playoff action, 7-game series action in June. Like, that's what's supposed to, there's the, you know, the sports calendar is what it is. You know, football is for the fall. Then when football's over, you get March Madness, and then when March Madness is over, you get playoff in the NBA. And then there's supposed to be a sick fucking NBA Finals in June. There wasn't a sick fucking NBA Finals in June. There was a shitty one. But there was an absolutely goddamn incredible NHL Stanley Cup final. So that'll do for this year, you know. Got back into hockey for the first time since I was like 7 years old. Again, did not get into hockey before the Stanley Cup final or even before game 3 when I went to the watch party. But I'm now the biggest Florida Panthers fan of all time. And so, yeah, I watched the game. I watched game 6 as well. Felt like in game 6, like no offense to anybody that I'm about to mention, but like game 6, Florida Panthers looked like the Fargo South Shanley Bruins with Loon Schmidt and Goose Logan Chesky compared to like facing Davies. Like, that's what it felt like. Wait, did Logan Mocheski play for Davies? Yeah, he did, didn't he? Who am I thinking of? Anyway, whatever. It's so long ago, I can't remember. Anyway. Just the whole point is the teams were not even close to equal in game 6. They killed us. Us being the Panthers in this case. Like, it looked, I'm not a hockey guy at all, but it looked to me like the Panthers were just like in a different sort of level than the Oilers were. Looked like there was nobody as talented as Connor McDavid, which obviously I've been told there isn't. I've been told he's the best hockey player in the world. Did not feel that way in game 7, though. Then in game 7, they just came out and felt like they hit. Like, if I'm playing Chell, like I'm fucking ramming up on the right stick every time. They're just hitting everybody left and right. Hitting everybody. Very physical. Just sort of randomly found their goals. And then Edmonton never scored except for the one time they made a mistake. And Florida had been making mistakes all series. But yeah, I mean, I was low-key shocked at how into it I got. I did like a whole like double fist pump. Like nobody, again, watching the game alone, nobody's in the room with me. Loon girlfriend's in Aruba. What a bummer her life is. But like, yeah, just sitting here alone, watching the game, dicking around on my phone, whatever. All of a sudden, Florida scores. I'm like, not uncontrollably, but instinctively, like, fist pumping and shit. And I was like, didn't even realize I cared that much. By the way, watching the Twins game, and they just already went down to rip in the first inning. Joe Ryan has thrown 5 pitches, and Ketel Marte just hit a homer. So, to rip for the bad guys. Corbin Carroll hit a hard line drive on the first at-bat as well. So, no outs. 2 balls hit very hard, and we are down to rip. At least our jerseys don't look like piss. Anybody who's watching this game knows what I'm referring to. But anyway, yeah, Bobby was back. Sergei Bobrovsky was back. He was kind of shit the past 3 games, but I guess it feels like it's probably pretty hard. I'm not a hockey guy again, but it feels like it's probably pretty hard to be a goalie when the other team is on a B way every single time. Like all the goals are off the B way. It's probably hard to be a good goalie when like there's a 19 B-way chances every game, which is what Florida was doing for the 3 games they lost. But then, yeah, and I was jacked up when they won. It was a good fucking game. It was a great fucking series. I love that the comeback means nothing now, because I've heard people cream their pants about how the comeback happened and the Oilers, blah, 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 and this is going to be such a great story, and now it means nothing. It's kind of hilarious. But yeah, also underrated, underrated part of it, the like lifting of the Stanley Cup is like the best trophy presentation in the sports. It's been a while since I've seen it, since I watched it. There is no equal to the lifting of the Stanley Cup. That's something that I actually do remember when I was into hockey, was like, this is fucking sick. I love how they all walk around and they all get to lift it. Also greatest trophy in sports, that probably has a lot to do with it. But the way they roll out the red carpet, they roll out the commissioner that everybody hates. He's like twitching the whole time, and then he gives his little speech, and then finally, like, the captain of the team gets to lift. It's pretty sick. It's pretty sick. And I've seen a lot of trophy presentations. I'd say the worst one is probably the NFL. The guy just like walks out with the trophy, and then with the Lombardi, and then everybody's like touching it, like kind of on the way, or like kissing it kind of on the way, and then I don't know, it's just weird. That one's weird. I don't know if I can remember really what the baseball one looks like. Obviously, like, all the golf ones are cool, too, but, like, Stanley Cup, it's pretty, it's a good-ass trophy presentation. Let me go through any notes I had. I did actually take a lot of notes because I was watching the game. Again, I know nothing about hockey, so a lot of these are probably very uneducated. I wrote, feels like Skinner is going off. He was going off for, I mean, I don't know, like, real hockey heads, puck heads, real puck boys could tell me, real mother puckers could tell me whether that second goal that he allowed was one that he should have saved or not, or you know, if it wasn't. It feels like Skinner's going off. Florida just has to figure out how to not give the fucking puck away. That was after their first goal allowed. It honestly, to me, the moment that happened, I was like, okay, Florida got off to a great start. We got the first goal. That was huge to change the momentum of the last three games and get a fucking lead for once. And then very quickly, not that many minutes later, just give it back to a tie ball game. Give a goal back. Let it be a tie ball game again. Tie puck game again on the type of goal that they've scored the entire second half of the series, just on our shitty fucking turnovers. PK Subban was losing his goddamn mind in the booth. Oh my god, they turned our self-inflicted wounds. That was my PK Subban impression. I wrote Florida head coach is giving weird vibes. I don't remember what that was based on. I think it was like an interview where he sounded a little weird. But then after the game was over, he seemed super normal. So I'm going to take that back probably. The Oilers head coach looks like he is always shitting. Like, he always is, like, poop halfway out his butthole. The Oilers head coach. The way he's, like, his face is, like, tight and, like, it's like he's flexing his face muscles at all times, like, trying to poop. Like, that's what it looks like to me. He's got a little bit of MLA going on as well. I wrote, if I gave a real serious shit about hockey, I'd be so anxious watching this shit. Yeah, if I was like if I was a hockey fan like that, and the game is going as fast as it is, and it's on like a fucking, like the game is resting on an inch here or there, and an inch here or there, at like 50 miles an hour, like that's how it feels. If I actually had a real dog in this fight, like what I'm saying is, like, if I liked the Panthers or the Wild or whoever it is, the way I like the Vikings or the way I like other Minnesota teams, like, watching a hockey game would put me in the hospital. I'd be, like, after the Wolves won that series against Denver, I was, like, in shock and, like, low-key crying. But I wasn't crying. But hockey is, like, 10 times faster than basketball. It's kind of electric. I wrote, shocked myself that I was fist pumping hard. Yeah, that's accurate. Skinner looking shakier. That was, as the game wrapped up, there was just a couple chances here and there that started adding up for both teams. Obviously, in the third period, there's no goddamn way the Oilers didn't score there, except for the fact that they didn't. So, like, there's a point, there were two big moments where Bobby was completely out of his goal. Just, like, flailing. The one where he didn't have a fucking stick anymore. Just, like, jumping around at the puck, hoping to stop it, but it kept getting blocked. Then there was another where he's, like, on his ass, like, rolling around in the crease like he's a fucking dog in a leaf pile. Just, like, no idea where the puck was. One of the defenders ends up saving it out of the net. And that kept the lead. And somehow that lead held. When it went 2-1, it didn't feel like that was the end of the game. I know Florida has, I guess I learned this yesterday, this whole thing where they want to win games 2-1. Did not feel like that was going to be good enough to win the game, but it obviously was. Felt like, to me, that Florida needed another goal, but they never got it and didn't actually end up needing it. I wrote, winning games matters. This is maybe like a bit of an old man take that I have related to other things, like notably the college football season this past year. Like, people are going to remember this Oilers comeback, or they were like trying to write it into existence that it was like the best comeback of all time in hockey, like prior to it actually being finished. Like, it means literally nothing. They lost the series 4-3. They are losers. It doesn't actually matter at all that Florida choked the way they did. And people are saying, oh my god, all-time choke. It doesn't fucking matter which games you won. You win 4 games and they win 3 games, you win. You are the champion. That's all that fucking matters. And that's how it should have been in college football. But the fucking narratives take over college football. And the team that literally didn't lose, won all their games, beat multiple top 25 teams and won a Power 5 conference, didn't even make the fucking playoff because the narrative suggested that they shouldn't have won. If you asked the narrative before this game who should have won, the narrative was saying the Oilers 10 times out of 10. And they lost. They lost big and hard. Well, they only lost by one goal. But there's a reason you play games. There's a reason the fucking winners of the games matter. And I got, like, I'm not even that big of a Panthers fan. Like, I've been a Panthers fan for a fucking week. I don't even give a shit, really. You know? I'm fake as fuck when it comes to, like, my fandom of the Panthers. But I almost got so annoyed of hearing how bad the choke would be, or how crazy this comeback was, and does this solidify McDavid as one of the GOATs, blah, blah, blah. Before the game even fucking happened, before they even finished off the comeback, and then they lost, and now they're losers, and it doesn't matter, and none of it ever mattered in the first place. My You Don't Know Ball Take of the Week is that games matter. There it is. My You Don't Know Puck Take of the Week. Anyway, that was a rant that nobody asked for. But yeah, it's 10 o'clock on a work night, so I don't know, you know, my patience for narratives is low, I guess, I don't know. I wrote, why do I feel like the fourth line has been in the game a ton? That was just a moment in the third quarter, or a third period, where it felt like the fourth line was in the game a ton. I wrote, Leon Draisaitl is a fraud. I don't know anything about that dude, but I'm told he's supposed to be good, and my eyes did not connect with what I was told about him being good. He didn't ever score or do anything that I could tell, and then his team lost, so I think he's a fraud. I just barely know what the Conn Smythe Award is, and I'm pissed off that it didn't go to the winning team. That's something that I low-key wish could happen in the NBA, is when, like, LeBron dominates the finals and then can't win finals MVP because he faces a super team that added Kevin Durant. Like, that, I wish that could happen in the NBA, but in this case, it happened in the NHL. They gave the Conn Smythe to McDavid instead of Bobrovsky. You know, honestly, I'm not, when I wrote that, I was pissed off. I wasn't actually pissed off. It was kind of a joke. I think it's the right decision. Like, he's had, like, a record-breaking playoffs or some shit like that. And Bobrovsky had three kind of shitty games that let the team back in, and so, you know, whatever. Great fucking game, great fucking series is my last note. Yeah, I mean, it was. Hockey Wales. Hockey kicked the shit out of basketball this June, or this May and June, in terms of how sick it was, so credit to the puck heads out there. moving on to baseball, the Twins. Twins are, let me think, I believe 3-3. I think technically 2-3 since the last pod, but I didn't talk about the first game of that series in the last pod. So they're 3-3. Lost one series 2-1, then beat, then won one series 2-1. First series was to the Rays, who are fine but not great. The AL in general, it's a there's a lot of good baseball teams in the AL. Because there's a lot of good baseball teams, none of them have that great of a record. Whereas compared to the NL, there's a lot of not very good baseball teams in the NL. and so even the ones that do have a decent record, like, are just kind of not that great. And there's a lot of teams that don't really have good records at all because the AL is killing the NL in interleague right now. But the Rays are, like, fine. They're literally 500. Looked it up just right now. They're 12 games back in their division at exactly 500. And they're in fourth. So, like, they're not a good team. But they're not, like, shit. You know, they're not like the White Sox, I guess, is what I'm saying. They're, like, an average baseball team. But average doesn't really work in the AL. Or, yeah. Anyway. We lost 2 of 3 to them. Both the losses were 10-run games, games that went to extra innings, and we lost by one run because they scored their free runner and we didn't. The first one was scored on a Royce Lewis throwing error, which, you know, that's not great. We're about to cream our jeans about Royce Lewis later in this podcast, though, so we're going to let it go. And then the second one was they got a hit in the ninth or in the 10th, and we didn't. And that's sometimes, I mean, especially now, that is literally all it takes. Sometimes if one team gets a hit in the 10th and the other team doesn't, then that runner is going to score and the other runner's not. And that's what decides 9-inning game, and that is what it is, or 10-inning game, I should say. Not maybe a ton to take away from this series. We're obviously right there. The Rays aren't a great standard to measure ourselves to, but I don't know. I just don't have anything real compelling to like glean from this series that taught us anything. To me, the Athletics series is more interesting, maybe just because we won. But like every game in the Rays series was one run. Like we won the first game 7-6 on a walk-off, which that was sick. I should mention that. That was sick. A little Carlos Santana walk-off single. Like, you know, cool. Get the boys going a little bit. Target field was probably bumping. Walk-off single is always, you know, one of the lamer ways to walk off, but that's fine. That's fine. Walk-off is a walk-off. Eugenio Suarez just hit... Oh, my gosh. Byron Buxton might be dead. Eugenio Suarez just hit one to the wall. Byron Buxton, like, flailed around on the ground for a little bit, and then they scored a run, and... Can he walk? Is he still alive? Why didn't he just, like, stand up? He's, like, swearing? Why does this guy get hurt all the fucking time? Like, also, he should have caught that. Anyway, you guys aren't even watching the game right now. Well, you might be, but not while you're listening to the podcast. Looks like he just maybe lost the ball and is mad at himself. Didn't actually get hurt. We'll see. Either way, we're down 3-0. Anyway, race series. Fun little walk-off. Then the exact opposite happened. Close games kind of could have gone either way. I mean, all of them obviously could have gone either way. Paulo Lopez didn't look very good in that first game, but, like, he looked excellent last time out, so I don't know. It just kind of seems to be alternating between being kind of average to, like, not great to then being excellent. We need more all the time excellent. But then, yeah, the 3-2 game, a 7-6 game that they won. Blown by Jay Jackson, but we kind of knew that Jay Jackson was shitty, so we got to get rid of him. We'll talk in a little bit, maybe some additions that I think the Twins should make. But let's move on to the next series. Athletics beat us 6-5. This was another game that shifted very late. They may have even walked off. No, it was in the eighth. It was in the eighth. Willie Castro hit a 3-run homer in the seventh. Just ripped one, pulled it. Line drive right over the right field fence. Batting from the left side in that case, Willie was. And then fucking Shea Langeliers, the fucking catcher who barely hits the ball at all, hit a homer to take the lead. And they kept that lead because Mason Miller's sick as hell. Throws the ball like 103, and he killed us. We're now down 4-0, sick. Next two games, though, we got a Bailey Ober complete game with less than 90 pitches, with 89-pitch complete game, allowed 2 runs. Won that game 10-2. Next game, Pablo Lopez takes a perfect game into the sixth. Ends up finishing 8 runs, no run, or 8 innings, no runs. Only 2 hits allowed, 1 walk, I believe, in 14 strikeouts. So just like a dynamite performance from him. And then with the rest day yesterday, our bullpen is complete. Like, our bullpen, everybody's 100%. They haven't done to work for 3 fucking days. Everybody's 100%. And that might be good because Joe Ryan is not looking great right now. We might need to use the bullpen starting in the fucking third inning because we're already down 4 runs. And he's only gotten 3 outs. So, would have loved to sort of let this bullpen sort of recharge this last for more than a day, but we'll see. Rocco was arguing with the umpire. By the way, shout out Loon Schmidt for getting me the hookup on the MLB.TV, because that is the only way I can watch the Twins, and I'm all over them now. So I'm locking in, like I said. I just have a few other notes. Oh, yeah, just that Willie Castro is, like, I think he's on, like, a 7-game hitting streak, batting 400 the past week or so. Already in his first at-bat in this game, hit the first pitch, just a solid liner to right. He's ripping the ball. Feels like a different dude is ripping the ball every week, which is good. It's better than the alternative where feels like everybody's kind of holding steady, and then one guy goes off for 1 week, and then another guy goes off for a different week. Obviously, Royce Lewis is kind of going off all the time. But definitely better than last year where it felt like at times there was only one guy capable of hitting the baseball on a particular week and everybody else would just strike out all the time. In general, this team feels better. I know we still suck against the good teams, and it feels more and more by the day that the Guardians aren't going to be as catchable as we have always thought they were, but because they seem to be actually very good. But compared to how this team has felt in the past 2 years, it feels like there's a bit of a comeback in them when they need a comeback. It also feels like there's a bit of blow the game in them with the bullpen sometimes, but there's been times the past year where you get a 3-0 lead and we don't have a prayer to come back, is how it's felt. So feels a little bit different than that now, but we'll see how long that stays. Let's get into the Royce Lewis deep dive. Now, did this a little bit last year. When there isn't a whole lot to talk about other than baseball, you got to talk about baseball quite a bit. And so I guess I could do deep dives with other dudes in other sports. I could do a talk about the Vikings deep dive into somebody. Maybe I'll do a J.J. McCarthy breakdown or something. See if I actually don't like him as much as I think I don't like him. Watch a little tape. That actually is kind of a good idea. But anyway, for this week, we got a Royce Lewis deep dive. And so we're going to get into the territory where I act like where I at least try to pretend like I know a lot of ball. Hopefully the conclusions I got to make sense and are accurate and or at least continue to happen and is somehow makes it seem like I know ball. So coming into this game, Royce Lewis was batting .348 is his average. .413 is his on-base percentage. .848 is his slugging percentage for a 1.261 OPS. All of those numbers, I mean, .348 and .413 are very, very high level average. That's like Luis Arraez level average and on base. .848 is unheard of slugging. And again, this is a short sample size. He's been back with the team for what, like a month? 3 weeks? I don't even remember. .848 and 1.261 are completely unheard of. 10 homers in, I don't know how many games, but 10 homers in like 66 at-bats or something like that coming into the game, which that's insane. So, like, he's incredibly hot, like, scorching right now. For his career, though, .318 average, .375 on base, .610 slugging, .985 OPS, 27 homers in 84 games or 85 games or something like that. Those are also incredibly, incredibly good numbers. Anywhere sniffing 1,000 OPS, you are lighting the ball on fire. So obviously the fact that he's 1.261, 1,200 OPS on the season so far means, you can't hit a lot better than that. It's not, like, possible. But the fact that he's sniffing 1,000 OPS for his career is pretty incredible. Until recently, I think it was over 1,000 OPS for his career. had a couple games where he didn't hit a homer, so that, you know, that just sucks. But yeah, 27 homers in 86 games now. I don't know what it is. But some of these stats are taken from a few days ago when they became, believe it or not, the Louisville State Sports does not have a high-end stats and informations team, so we just kind of have to take what gets tweeted out when it gets tweeted out. Through 82 games, through 82 career games, which, again, Royce just passed, but we're going to take his numbers through 82 games. Only Yordan Alvarez and Ryan Braun had higher average and homers. So there are dudes who had higher homers. There's dudes who had higher average through 82 games, but nobody has had higher in both than Yordan Alvarez and Ryan Braun. If you think about what Ryan Braun turned in, Ryan Braun was one of the best, one of the two, three best players in all of baseball for his prime and or I guess early prime and into the prime. He's one of the best, single best players in baseball. Yordan Alvarez, you could argue, is one of the best hitters in baseball right now. So, Ryan Braun won an MVP, I think. So, for a year, he was the best player in baseball. If you think about that, nobody else has had a better career through the amount of games that Royce Lewis has played right now than, except for two guys who are both, you know, Yordan Alvarez is probably a top five hitter in baseball right now. I think he's having a bit of a down year this year, but at points in the past few years, he's been that. There's a time where Ryan Braun was maybe the hardest out to get in the league and was hitting pumps all over the place. He was also on PEDs, so that was kind of whatever, but that doesn't change the fact that he was mashing the ball when he was mashing the ball. So the fact that Royce Lewis is among those names with the way he started his career is, I think, a level or two higher than I expected it to be. And so consider if I'm tripping over my words. If he stays healthy and if he keeps doing what he's doing right now, he will then turn it. Based on this pace, he will turn into one of the best hitters in baseball in both average and power. And the fact that it's both of those things is important to the point that I'm about to make. Again, 316 average for his career, 27 homers in 82 games for his career. So Pete Alonso has the rookie record for homers with 53 homers in 162 games his first year. If you think about a rookie hitting 53 homers, 53 is a lot of fucking homers in one season. If you think about a rookie doing that, that's incredible. And when Pete Alonso did that in 2017 or 18 or 19 or whatever it was absolutely incredible. Unbelievable, unheard of before. The second best rookie home run year is 39, Cody Bellinger, a few years before that. By the way, Pete Alonso, I think that was like the juice ball year, so like shit was weird. So 53 homers in 161 games is unheard of. If you take that on a per game basis, it is 0.329 homers a game. So basically every three games he's going to hit a homer. Through 82 games, Royce Lewis has 27 homers. If you do 27 divided by 82, you get exactly 0.329. So that means, based on his pace so far, Royce Lewis has had a better home run hitting start of his career than any other player ever, or as good as any other player ever. Now, I should make a disclaimer now that it's going to hold true for all of this. The fact that Royce Lewis's first 82 games are spread over three different seasons so far, because he hasn't been able to stay consistently healthy, is like, that is part of the reason that he's so good, is that he's not actually that super young and that inexperienced as 82 games would suggest. He's been able to work on his hitting through multiple different spring trainings with the big league club, just sort of grow as a player and as a hitter over a couple more years of life than some of these other guys did in their first 162 games or first 82 games, whatever.
That being said, it's also very difficult to come back from the injuries the way he has and to continue to immediately mash when he gets back in the lineup the way he has. So, like, I think it can go both ways, but that's just a disclaimer for anybody trying to discredit this information. So, anyway, we can think of... If you think about Royce Lewis and the way he hits homers, as the way Pete Alonso hits homers, it's sort of... It surprised me, at least, to see that he was up there in terms of power numbers, because Pete Alonso is a clearly power-only guy. He batted 260 that year. His career batting average is even worse than that. He bats like 250 for his career, which is fine, perfectly fine when you hit 40 homers a year, which he does. But Royce Lewis is on like a 50 homer pace for a full season type of thing and batting 320 for his career, if you take his career numbers. And the whole point of all of that is Royce Lewis is off to one of the best home run hitting starts of any career ever in the history of baseball. Hank Aaron didn't start off as well as Royce Lewis did. Barry Bonds didn't either. Obviously, Barry Bonds was skinny back then. But nobody, very few players have ever hit home runs as high of a clip as Royce Lewis has to start his career. And his average is 316 for his career, which is much higher than would be expected for a home run hitter of his type. So here's where things get interesting. Royce Lewis's average exit velocity numbers, which is one of the main things that baseball people look at to determine if a player is actually fucking good or not, is if they're just hitting the ball hard. His average exit velocity numbers are not as good as you would think based on the amount of homers he's hit. Through all of last year, which wasn't even a full qualifying year because of the injuries, he was around 60 to 65%. This year, he's around 35%, despite hitting 10 homers and 67 at-bats now because he just had one. That doesn't seem to make sense. Why is his average exit velocity so low if he's hitting so many homers and if he's getting on base at a high rate, getting a lot of just base hits as well? What gives here? The barrel hit percentage is still high. So a barrel is essentially a ball that's hit. I don't remember the exact numbers, but if it's hit 95 miles an hour, let's say, or more, and between a certain launch angle and a certain launch angle, basically if you hit the ball hard, you get a barrel. If you get the ball hard and in like a line drive or a ideal pop fly type of trajectory, then you get a barrel for that. It's called a barrel percentage. His barrel percentage numbers are very high. They're in the 90th percentile or higher. His hard hit percentage is very high. That's just exit velocity over a 95, I believe it is. So that's good. But the top-end exit velocity numbers that you would expect for a guy that's hitting as many home runs as he is are not there. If you look at a guy like Giancarlo Stanton, a guy like Shohei Ohtani, a guy like Pete Alonso, they're all hitting the ball way harder at the top end of their exit velocity numbers than Royce Lewis is. He's also never sort of felt like a power guy, and this is a little bit weird and not scientific or whatever, but coming up when I watched him in St. Paul, like, he was skinny. He's 6'2", 200 technically. He's a short 6'2", I'd say, but listed that way. Sort of isn't big but isn't small either. Kind of just felt like a guy that was gonna have five tools but maybe not insane in one, and the fact that the power numbers have been insane is a bit surprising there. And his prospect ranking numbers would indicate the same thing. So before the MLB draft, or even when players are drafted and in the system, probably before they come up, I think players are given a grade rating from 20 to 80. And don't ask me why it's fucking 20 to 80. It's one of the stupidest scales of all time. But the point is that 20 is, like, the worst. So, like, if you're
And it's based on, like, the tools, right? So the tools being, I don't remember all of them, but it's contact, hitting, power hitting, defense, arm, and speed are, like, the traditional five tools. I believe the rating system measures more than that, but anyway. So basically think that, like, if, like, Joey Gallo, for example, would have a 20 on contact hitting because he strikes out 35% of the time. Shohei Ohtani, Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge have, like, 80 for power hitting because they are the best power hitters. So wait, for this scale, 50 is considered average. So as a prospect, Royce Lewis had a 55 contact hit rating and a 50 power rating. He is currently performing close to like a 60-65 contact hitting based on his average and a 70 power rating based on the amount of homers he's hit. Those are made up by me, the second ones. But the fact is that, like, he's hitting for power in a level that his exit velocity doesn't suggest he should be. His body type and sort of, like, what he looks like doesn't seem like he should be. And the way that his prospect rankings don't suggest that he ever should have been capable of. So the natural question is this even something that's sustainable? And I think the easy answer is to be like, no, he'll fall back. And, like, obviously he will. He's not going to hit. He's not going to be fucking Mickey Mantle. But I think the assumption that he's not going to be able to do this for a long time is not necessarily correct, because his power, his in-game power, doesn't rely necessarily on raw power capability. If you measure his raw power against somebody like Joey Gallo's raw power, they are not even close. Joey Gallo, in a vacuum, will hit the ball way fucking farther. His exit velocities are higher. All sort of the measurable power numbers are going to indicate that Joey Gallo is a better raw power guy. Or, you know, and so is Pete Alonso, and so is Giancarlo Stanton, blah, 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 blah. But the point is that Royce Lewis's approach to hitting, the way his plan when he gets into the batter's box, is such that he can create homers that are just as good as everybody else's homers, but they don't necessarily require the top end raw power that it would seem like he would have to hit as many homers as he's hitting. And that approach is elevating everything that you can pull. So everything as a right-handed hitter that he can hit to left field, you take that opportunity and you try to elevate. Everything that you can't, you do not try to elevate at all. You try to hit it on a line. And so you will see in Royce Lewis's games, anything in, especially middle in, he's going to try to turn on and he's going to try to lift over the left field fence. The majority of his homers come from the inside half of the plate, middle in. He swings, I looked all this shit up online. He swings at the middle in, sort of if you break the strike zone into nine squares, the one that's in the middle and all the way in. He swings at that pitch. Pitch is located there. He swings 100% of the time this season, and he has never missed. And that is where most of his homers are coming from. But if you see him go away, he'll still swing at the ball when he needs to. You know, his approach is not say, okay, I can only swing on the inside half of the plate. He'll still swing, but he looks to line the ball. He looks to go with it the other way. He looks to hit a single over the second baseman instead of hitting it over the fence. Guys like Shohei Ohtani, who have super high-level exit velocity, they can hit homers to all fields, and they do. Guys like Royce Lewis,
every single one of his 27 homers in his MLB career, except for three of them, has gone to left field. And that's because when he can pull it, he's going to pull it and he's going to elevate it and try to get a homer that way. If he can't, he's not even going to fucking try. And so he doesn't have weak fly balls or, deep fly balls that don't go out, warning track power to right field. He doesn't do that because he hits the ball on the line to that field. Of his three homers that gone to the opposite field, to right field, two of them were line drives hit really hard that barely snuck out, got literally the first row. The other one was a incredibly high fly ball that was probably a miss hit, probably didn't do what he wanted to do with that ball, that snuck into the first row. So the point is that his power, in terms of the amount of home runs he's hitting, is based on his approach to the plate, not on his body or his swing or his like makeup that everybody can measure to say whether he's going to hit a bunch of home runs or not. Now, am I just making this up? No, I'm not just making this up. Mookie Betts, like I have proof that this is a thing that actually works. Mookie Betts is 5'8", 180. He's a small dude by all sort of measures. Mookie hit 39 pumps last year at 5'8", 180, and only two of them were to the opposite field because he just doesn't try to hit homers to that side. When you have a good enough discipline of the plate, the way Mookie does, the way Royce does, you know that if this pitch is here, I can't try to do this with it. I have to, you know, if this pitch is on the outside, I'm not going to try to hit a homer with it. I'm going to try to line it the opposite way for a single. And that's why both of their averages were over 300, are over 300. But if the pitch is in and it's something that I can pull and elevate, then I'm going to take that opportunity every time. I'm going to hit it every time. And I'm going to rack up a bunch of pumps. So Royce Lewis, despite not being huge, despite not having super high-end exit velocity numbers, can hit 40 pumps and can bat 315 for the rest of his career simply because his approach is good enough. Obviously, that's considering hopefully he stays healthy. You know, Shohei hits 40 pumps a year because any pitch anywhere in the zone, he can hit as hard as he wants to any field because he can hit the ball 120 miles an hour. That's why Shohei gets 40 pumps a year. But Royce Lewis can get 40 pumps a year just by waiting for anything on the inside half and to pull it out over the left field wall. So I guess the point is, this smart hitting approach that Royce Lewis has taken is the reason why he is going to continue to succeed. It's the reason why likely that he's had so much success coming back from injuries in the past, from time off, is that the approach doesn't stay. The muscles can get tired, you can get a little rusty, but the approach is still there. It doesn't go away. When your mind is right and you can see the ball into the zone the way that guys like Mookie, guys like Royce can, then you can repeat it over and over and over again, and it kind of never leaves you. And that is why I believe he's going to be a hitter of this caliber for a long time to come. That's the Royce Lewis deep dive. Now to my foot. Quick water break. Oh, by the way, before to my foot and water break, the NBA draft is tomorrow. The Wolves have picks 27 and 37. Anybody, I'm going to look up a mock draft right now, see who we're going to get. Predictions for 58 picks, that's what I'm trying to see. Also, by the way, the NBA draft being 2 days now, all-time stupid. That's just ridiculous. Who's gonna tune into, I have to log into my ESPN Plus. That's just a fucking pain in the ass. Oh, Jesus. Looking for username login. Yes, I am. Who's gonna fucking
I mean, that's just... I mean, gee, okay, well, I'm just going to look somewhere else. I can't log in, apparently. We're going to go Yahoo Sports. Don't know if I trust them over there, but... It says we are going to get Cam Christie from Minnesota coming home. A little backup point guard action. I guess that's fine. That's cool. He can sit on the bench right next to Josh Minot and Leonard Miller. That's a good spot for him. With the 37th pick, we're going to get AJ Johnson from Illawarra, Australia. He can sit on the other side of, you know, he can sit probably further to the end of the bench. Maybe I don't even know who's sitting on the end of the bench. We're talking like Luka Garza is like four spots ahead of him on the bench is like where this guy's going to sit. Anyway, probably in the G League team actually is where he's going to sit. Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll do a full breakdown of the Wolves draft coming up next week. That's a lie. Anyway, my foot. After a water break presented by I don't give a fuck. By the way, I don't know if any of that Royce Lewis stuff made sense. Or if it was... There's also a chance that it just, like... Like, duh. Look at that. I just Googled a bunch of random shit just to prove something that everybody knows already. That's possible. Whatever. It is what it is. Podcast game ain't easy. my foot. So I went to the surgeon yesterday. I went to the surgeon up in Plantation, Florida. Which, is actually very close to where the Panthers, you know, Panthers won the Stanley Cup last night. So just like a bunch of elite athletes doing their thing up in Plantation / Sunrise, Florida. There was a Bobrovsky signed jersey in the room I was in. So that was fucking sick. And then there was also a... I don't remember who it was. There's somebody else. There's like four signed pictures. Five signed pictures. There's a Bobrovsky signed picture. Somebody else that's current on the team. I think it was Barkov, but I could have been totally wrong about that. Signed picture in my operating room. It wasn't an operating room. It was a random fucking nurse room, whatever. And then three guys from like the 2000s who I definitely don't recognize. But I thought that was pretty sick. Like probably a couple thou worth of signed memorabilia in that room. Too bad my foot's broken and I can't steal it and run away. anyway, diagnosis was do not need surgery. Turns out not even a Jones fracture. So that shit I said last week about Derrick Henry and all that stuff, how I'm an elite athlete, is not actually true. Because it fractured on the base of the bone that's closer to the heel, it's going to recover way easier than it would have been if it was in the middle of the bone, which is good. So they took out... I was wearing a boot, which was fucking ridiculous, and I had to, like, wear it in bed, which is worse. So they said I don't have to do that. They gave me, like, a little granny, like, sandal for like diabetes. If you ever have a relative with diabetes, they like wear this sandal. That's the one. So I have to wear that. And then, but I can walk again. So I'm allowed to walk. I could have walked like 2 days ago, but I didn't know I was allowed to. I didn't know I could put weight on my, I didn't want to fuck anything up. But anyway, this guy, the doctor was like, yeah, no, you're good. As long as you, don't feel any pain, you're doing the right thing. And I was like, all right, so I can walk. I can walk very slowly. I basically hobble. I'm like an old man. But I've been kind of using the crutches for long distance and then like just walking myself for short distance. So if I get up and piss after I record this podcast, I will be walking, which is huge compared to, you know, 2 days ago when I thought I had to crutch everywhere or hop everywhere. I couldn't put weight on my foot or whatever. So that's good news. You know, it is
T-minus exactly 1 week since the or T-plus 1 week, I guess, since the injury. And I'm pleasantly surprised with how quickly everything's going. So, you know, honestly, I feel like my foot is better than it was yesterday, which is better than it was the day before. Like, I feel like it's getting better every day. Like, today to walk down to get to the bathroom from my office in the second floor, like, I'm still taking the elevator, but I'm walking. I'm not crutching, you know. Get my little Skittles at 3 p.m. I'm walking to the break room, not crutching over there. So it's good. Feeling good in general. And, yeah, that's podcast. We'll do the, oh, nice. I think I'm going to be golfing within the week. I think. The one thing he said I can't do is, like, run and jump and, like, cut. So anything, like, active running around sports in that way, like, nah. But I feel like golf, if I just put a lot of weight in the front foot, swing really lightly, I could probably play golf next week if I do cart, maybe in the cart. Certainly not walking 18, that'd be fucking insane. But I almost don't want to build bad habits. Nah, fuck it, I want to play golf, who cares? Maybe going to build bad habits by not being able to rotate my foot and then have like a weird swing once my foot is actually good again. But I'm so fucking bored of not doing anything. So, yeah, anyway, I'm so back. People are saying I'm on steroids, how quickly I'm recovering. They're not saying that. Anyway, I don't know what the emoji is. Purple devil emoji for no reason. Peace.